Alright, I think we're recording here. Well, this is my first recording after we, COVID. Lisa and Matt are firmly ensconced in Tooth Carry, Beer Cottage. Family house that my mom had for some years and now it's fallen to me. And so we decided to pull up stakes and go to Tooth Carry. So now I'm driving from Beer Cottage, our glamping universe, glamorous camping. Always talked about perma camping before, kind of the attitude of, you know, living it a little on the rough side. Lisa's okay with glamping. Expressed her opinion lately, her opinion lately on glamping. Well, in the last one, I don't know if she's firm on that, but it doesn't matter. Little house. We were looking at yours yesterday for Matt. Matt seems okay. Matt just wants his own space, where he doesn't get chastised for how messy his room is and how much stuff he's got. You can't really stuff in there and make it look decent. So, I think Matt's wanting his own space because he doesn't want to be, he doesn't want to be worked over anymore by mom. So, everybody's planning kind of a big year for the guy. Like a 20 foot. I think that's diameter. 20 foot diameter. And already got a place to kind of put it up in the backyard. Anyway. So, we got all that running. Anyway, a couple of days ago, I got bored and decided I'd apply for a whole bunch of remote and traveling jobs. Although I put all these things into God's hands. Trust that he'll steer me in the right direction. Woke up this morning, not really relishing leaving Lee. I'm kind of emotionally attached to her, which I think you should be to your spouse. I think that's really, really important. I mean, it's important to me. I don't know, you know, other people live very, very separate lives. I think that's usually a an indication that you're, you know, a footstep away from divorce. But anymore, people don't, you know, people do marriages like they do dating, you know. It seems to, over time, have lost some of it. Lost some of its permanence. The fact that there's something you have to strive for. Like some people, probably more of the feminine sort, are really into the actual wedding itself. Not that anybody approaches it badly, but you know, a guy who'd probably be perfectly happy just kind of playing the field and dating a bit, you know, having kind of a live-in friend with privileges type of situation. We've gotten women kind of in the same place, I think, and very sad. And yeah, the girl or the woman, well, let's be honest, a lot of them older too, like the princessy of all of the fuss and hustle and bustle about a wedding. And you go, it's mostly just practically meaningless ceremony. Around a around a boyfriend girlfriend situation, maybe to get old fuddy-duddy parents, grandparents off somebody's back because they don't approve of these kinds of situations, you know, live in boyfriend, girlfriend with privileges type thing, where you basically kind of act like you're married for sex, for sexuality and kids start just to kind of appearing, and then you just kind of never get married, or you just kind of decide that it's not interesting to you and you wander off. So I find that really sad, because in my relationship with Lisa and I, we're very much joined at the hip. And kind of the whole completing each other thing, not in the infatuated, although I can't say that Luke and I, after 3 years, are still quite, we still like each other a lot. Yeah, we have our stuff. It's not really hard, we certainly have differences, but that's different. You know, that's just normal for any of these situations. Anyway, I'm still, even after I applied for all these traveling jobs, which I really don't want, I'm not really interested in traveling anymore, and Lisa and I really don't need a lot of money. It seems like the more we look at things, the more we try to downsize and trying to have smaller needs. indicates the whole fact that we're thinking of putting that in a yurt for his own private space. He can have his own, it's becoming obvious that we need another toilet. So Matt's gonna have kind of a combination bathroom. Kitchen. I don't think he's going to have a separate lavatory for the bathroom. There's just going to be a sink in the kitchen for shaving and dishes, stuff like that. So hopefully that will kind of push him to keep up with his cleaning, is that he has to brush his teeth and do his dishes in the same basic way. And a little microwave. I'm not sure how exactly I want to do heat out there. I think there will be a lot of issues around gas. And water and sewer hookups. We might end up having to do something that kind of feels like a trailer hookup. And then let it go from there. Yeah. That's the way we can explain it to people so they don't get weird. Say, oh no, you can't do this. Oh no, you can't do that. They go, yeah, we can, actually. We can do all this stuff. So anyway. You're needing to have several things stuffed out anyway. So, for gas, so we're going to go ahead, I think, we're going to put the gas line in to where the gas fireplace. And then have all the utilities drawn out to that place. So in the midst of all these things going on, my first choice of all these things is really to get the job, the cooperative extension service. I think that's an old economist.
Marriage to a large extent completes people.
people left alone tend to get narcissistic. They don't tend to, you know, and they have, can I be honest, they have regulation issues. Single people acting by themselves and not having to be answerable to someone else, they'll do things that don't, that aren't very good. Self-centeredness, anyway, we see it in a lot of things. Parenting gets a little weird with single parents. It isn't just that you need two people, but you really do. You don't get the sort of moderation, almost, that stable life depends on. Children need stability more than almost anything else. And and single parents struggle with that. You know, you don't have to moderate yourself. I came from a broken home myself. Spent a lot of my childhood, my teen years, I just had my mother around, and she was so busy going off, just doing what was required, just keeping alive. I didn't have a lot of moderation. I wasn't a very immoderate person. We were all lucky there. I didn't go off and do all kinds of crazy stuff. I think my mom had a lot of help from her mother. And her parents. And it made it so that, she has to depend a lot upon extended family. It's doable, it's being done more and more and more and more and more in society. I don't think it's a good trend. It's just what had to happen because of the increased circumstances here of people not committing to these sort of situations. anyway, Lisa and I have a very different thing that way. We tend to resolve our concerns. There was a concept, it doesn't get talked about much at all these days, or at least I haven't heard it in the popular media. What little of that I get, I'm sorry to say, but about a thing called codependency. And it used to be brought up in the whole thing of, there used to be a thing about that many relationships were very abusive. You know, it was always framed as the man was a drunken jerk and beat on his wife and things like, you know, there was kind of a whole partisan picture about it. And, and the woman, for economic reasons, they would always say, oh, it's because that dirty man wouldn't share his money with her. She was his practical slave. And that was what codependency was kind of looked at as. is that, you know, this isn't right. You need to be two very independent people that, you know, the whole living together thing is just simply a question of personal benefit, I guess. And, the marriages we're trying to be kind of easy to get in and out of. The marriage is mostly for convenience. So I think it came part and parcel with that. So anyway, you have this thing called codependency. And Lisa's mom always kind of accused the two of us of being really codependent. And you're going, I thought that was kind of what constituted a pretty decent marriage, was that you two pulled together and depended on each other and were kind of reliant on each other. So I don't know if she was trying to say that she thought I was being abusive, which I don't think I was. Anyway. You get better over time, can I tell you that? Or you try to. Hopefully, you have at least a really good period that makes up for the hard times. I'm two really separate people. Lisa and I have very little actually in common. The primary thing we share together is faith, same faith. Which helps a lot. We have basically the same goal in life. Well, that's early. So, I was talking about self-reliance. A lot of people look at to that as an individual thing. And there is individual aspects to it, of course, but let me tell you, it's a whole lot easier to be self-reliant when you're a couple. You know, make up for each other when one or the other in town or having problems. Need help. Anyway, faith before marriage. Always have. And I think I've only gotten more strife about the reasons why over time. A natural, productive, marriage is the far as I'm concerned with is the purpose of life. If you don't engage in this kind of stuff, you're just like, why are you here? Type thing. You know? What makes life worth living if that's the way you're gonna life. I mean, you can live your life however you want to. There's material on earth and situations and circumstances. Sufficient for whatever your needs are. It really is. Family structure supplemented by the extended family really is all individual people need to not only sustain themselves, but take care of the family by nature. It's how children get here. It's the best situation in which to raise children. Certainly should be, this is meant to be, the most stable situation for that matter. So it can take is, well, the research says that probably getting information this way is more effective than doing it this way. Or it's more likely to be inculcated by the learner than this method, that method. You go, there you go. Thank you. Research based. The numbers can, by honest numbers, can get us to do silly things. I gotta come up with a good example for that. Overpopulation. And say, wow, China is going to have a big problem. Too many old people, not enough young people. But the fact that when you kind of mess around with humanity's natural tendencies, whether you think this is evolutionary or dictated by some higher power, I don't know if that really matters. Designed to have multiple children. We have a sex drive that wants to have sex a lot. We have a decently long fertility period. Men are fertile pretty much from puberty on. Women can have children from their puberty into the 50s, and there's that. And you can have several children in your Duggar family. An amazing take on exactly what. How many kids are you going to have? Not to say that's what the census is. That's what's doable. And, I think we're designed to have more children than we do. China's one-child policy is probably one of the most interesting studies on the whole thing. They're saying, for a kind of politicized, socialistic, trying to make everybody behave the same way, and turning your education. Your education being based on some sort of statistic. I'm not saying Chinese came up with the wrong statistic. I'm not saying their numbers were fudged or incorrect. You know, one of the big aspects of home economics when I was teaching it as a younger man was the fact that you would saddle these kids with this electronic baby, and this baby would cry and need a lot of attention all the time. At the time, it was called Baby Think It Over. They changed it. They tried to make it a little more politically correct because people were starting to catch on that the only thing that Baby Think It Over was to do was to make kids hate children, having children. They don't want it. That kids cramp your more, much far more important social life, or you're making money and you don't want to spend that money on that child, you want to spend that money on other things, you know. And we would know, we would talk about, oh, this is how much a child costs over a lifespan. And it's some tens of thousands of dollars, probably more than that now. And it was all kind of a discouragement to having children. Don't do it. And I didn't think much of it for a while, but then I started thinking about it, you know, this is evil. I'm not going to promulgate it. And it really kind of produced some problems for other people who were just kind of doing what they were told, which was, this is a program that we do. Here's the money to put into schools. And, of course, every school teacher loves it when you bring in a little bit of a curriculum for them, even if you'll come and teach it for them. There was a lot of that going on. People that were sent to school to teach this whole mantra, and when it got right down to it, it was kind of evil money, I think. Basically, the zero population people trying to encourage everybody to stop having children. And it was actually quite effective, I thought. And let me tell you, the teen pregnancy rate has gone way down. The only problem is, it's going to end up being bad. I think we've trained such a hatred of having children into the psyche that most young people don't want to have kids. There's plenty of rationalization, you know. Oh, we need to reduce our carbon footprint, you know. One of the ways you can do that is to not have children. You know, don't bother doing it. And I'm sorry, I'm totally against that. Now, you know, you can say, oh, but that's ideological. Because look at these numbers. Look at what these numbers show. And you go, yes, I know. It says, all those numbers. I said, I don't think there are plenty of fudge numbers, and these might not be. You go, however. You go, we're not learning from China. China made a huge mistake. It really discouraged childbirth, child rearing, and did it through ideological, cultural conditioning. I mean, there were purges of people who wouldn't do what the government said. There was a lot of that. The Chinese people you see now were predominantly the survivors of this, and one of the primary ways you survived was signing on to all these things, and not just like signing a piece of paper and saying, yes, yes, I believe this way, but actually showing that you believe by not having children or by only having one child. Thank you. China's problem. Have a whole world full of old people and only a handful of people to keep them running. And we'll be doing what Europe's doing right now, which is doing their damnedest to import other cultures. And guess what? Because you can say, oh, I know what Swedes look like. Blonde hair, white skin, you know, this and that. You're going, you might as well change the name of it to something else, because it's not going to be that way. Far more Africans there, far more Muslims there, Middle Easterners, hopefully, let me be honest. You can say it's a religion, I don't, I won't cast it that way. Middle Easterners. You're going, if you still call them Swede, that's fine. But yes, Swede will be dark skinned and have olive skin like me. And whatever you thought Swede was known for, it's not going to be known for anymore. It's going to be known for other things. I have a problem with immigration. I have a problem with it particularly, but here's the thing. You know, people say, there's a lot of white teams. Number one, Western Caucasian people have a lot of self-hatred now. And it was preached by groups that thought that for ideological and political reasons, thought that Africans and Middle Easterners were more amenable to the kind of worldview that certain that powerful social players have. Which I think is also wrong. It's actually poorly done. Yet again, lots and lots of numbers. We collect more and more and more and more and more data, and we face what to do on this data. Some people say it's because the data is bad. I think there's plenty of evidence that it's not the data that's bad. It's the fact that people are using this data to forward certain agendas. There you go. There's the popular agenda. And you can steer what that is collected. Very easy. Researchers won't do studies on stuff that's not going to make some money for them. Can I be honest? That's the way it is. And we see this more and more, that studies are being conducted with an agenda. You know, we want evidence that this is happening, and that it's taught by this. And research will go out and says, here's a ball of money. Go out and do some research around these issues. Now, any smart researcher will say, I kind of want this money to come in. You know, if I don't spend the money and basically give these people what they want, the next time the money comes around, I won't get it. Hello? What's going on? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Right away. sit there and act like I'm being an idiot. Come on, dude. You can make that turn. That's a... Anyway. So, yeah. Important to use the term research-based, but I'll be the first one to say, boy, that's a strange term, and we're going to have lots and lots of fun showing you how we can use research-based techniques to spread all kinds of lies and misinformation. And you're going, it really has to do with what's culturally acceptable to certain times. A thousand things. I was at a recent conference of Family and Consumer Science, New Mexico Association of Consumer and Family Science. And, there was a presentation on all the chemicals in cosmetics. And one of the conclusions was that the Food and Drug Administration should take on a regulatory regime over this stuff, of course. Cal said, yeah, part of the problem is that people are... A lot of regulators are in the pockets of the cosmetics industry. The industry doesn't want to really do anything about it. Almost as these guys were out with these poison women. And one of these women piped up, kind of pissed me off. And she thought that there wasn't any traction on this kind of stuff. She was really trying to simplify it. But she was trying to bring up the gender war, which I don't think it's ever useful to bring up a gender war. But she thought that there was too many men in Congress, and that that's why this was picked up, because men don't care about the garbage and cosmetics. Only women care about that. And I'm just like, wow, that is a huge leap to take, and boy, evil men, you know what, better get accustomed to being called evil. I don't even care anymore. I'll even preface everything I do and say by saying, hey man, number one, I'm evil. It's just that I'm the evil that seduced that can be in your corner if you'll let you gotta learn how to make this work. You turn it into a war and said, I will use all my evil to destroy you. Because that's what evil does. I'll be happy to destroy you. And I'll laugh while you're in your death room. Now, listen, or you can make deals with me, and I'll act another indication of, well, I've got some numbers here, and this is how you can use these numbers to interpret them. You go, trust me. If you make it worth my while, you help me with some evil, wicked thing I'm doing over here, I'll help you with cosmetics. That sounds like an easy thing. I can go ding ding, and I can get a lot of women to vote for me. Wow! Win-win, baby. Come on. Let's party. So yeah, I don't believe the least bit of what you're talking about. I think it's naive bordering on just blunt ignorance. So don't you understand? You obviously have no concept about power. Anyway. And so, yeah, and I said, oh, that's such a tawdry thing. And I said, and a free market, an unregulated market, has a better chance of making sure that people have better choices. It also ended up being kind of a weird advertisement for Burt's Bees product. They say, oh, they're so natural. They don't have all this crap. And they go, okay, fine. They go, that's great. And then, you know, number one, I find it kind of interesting that it ended up being kind of a native ad for Burt's Bees. But, it also kind of came down to me, what the hell is backed up the front of your head? But it was, the whole thing was, we need to lobby the government to stop this from happening, and you go, it seems like the end is making the end of the day. Would be to,
as I know, that the red
lipstick that's all the rage, especially with the unit. That really does demand a certain amount of lead to make that, you know, and to make it stick so you're not constantly taking it off. You're going, oh yeah, it's putting it to our attention. It's horrible. And you're going, but you're making the conscious choice to do this. You're making a conscious choice to do this, and you choose to stay informed about it. Is that you poisoning yourself? And you go, why should somebody else be held responsible for that? Why should somebody else worry about your health more than you do? But, you know, if you want to be safe, take it yourself. But, you know, I don't need to be just cruel about the fact that a lot of people don't want to have to be responsible. You know, there will be other companies. Why don't you form one that ends up being something along the lines of her? Why not? They started something here. Anyway, so yeah, I found that whole idea just kind of interesting. But I found it really impractical. And I'm not a guy that says there should be a law. I'm kind of a fighter for liberty. I think liberty gives people more choices, and people with given more choices will choose what they want. And you can't blame other people. I mean, you can come back and you can say, hey, this is false advertising. They claim that this stuff was safe and it wasn't. So, I've already got a structure for doing that. It's called the legal system. Get yourself a lawyer and go out. Let me tell you, man, there's tons of money to be made in litigation. You have to use power in your face. You can't spend your time constantly just whining, complaining about how unfair you think life is and going out and just, you know, feeling about everything. You know, the primary reason why we don't have flying cars. I remember when I was a kid, I looked at the old encyclopedias. I had some old ones from like the 30s and 50s. And they all talked about the year 2000, how amazing it was going to be. And they had these cool, interesting pictures of kind of the space age building that we would have. We basically got so we'd all have flying cars. But guess what? We don't. And it isn't that they're not out there. There's plenty of there for the last 50 years. There's plenty of flying cars. Now, the problem is the situation is so heavily regulated. The Federal Aviation Administration is incredibly weird about what's allowed to fly in the sky. I mean, look, there used to be, when drones first came out, boy, you could send almost anything up. As a drone and do all kinds of fun stuff. And then all of a sudden the regulators started breaking down. And now, you know, we have to have a license, we haven't got this, we have that. I'm not saying that, just know there's a lot of regulation. We don't have five cars now because of regulation. And I'll tell you what, the current environment, current regulatory environment, I'll tell you one thing that we would not have today, the cars. Cars would have never been allowed to They would have stayed kind of a rich person, quasi-experimental silliness that they were back in the late 1800s. When the first cars came out, you go, oh no, the Henry Ford came out first. No, Henry Ford was the first one to apply principles of mass production to automobiles, and therefore made them accessible to a lot more people. He was the one that turned what was originally kind of a hobby into something that almost everybody had. Depending on who you talk to, for better or for worse, there's plenty of people that rub their hands together and say, hi, that sounds great. We need to regulate more because, yeah, we could have prevented cars from coming to that. We all would have stayed traveling on trains, stuff like that. That's why it's not that we don't know how to do cars. It's been simple. I was just reading a news article on Bloomberg this week, and it was showing off some of the interesting cars. Are they ever coming down? No. Why not? Actually, they're really interesting because they actually look like drones. Drones did a wonderful job. What an interesting innovation. Instead of having all these wings, a lot of the flying cars used to have wing problems. And the problem is, in order to hold up something as heavy as a car, even a really lightweight car, requires a lot of lift. And to get a lot of lift, if you're going to use wings to do it, requires pretty good size wings. And we finally got down to the point where now the new full flying cars now look like drones. They've got the four arms sticking out with the propellers on all the four arms. And kind of taking advantage of the fact that the FAA really doesn't have a good regimen for figuring out how to stop people from using drones. They just want drones to disappear. They just want to control my private time. They want the military to be able to use drones. Law enforcement serve them. They want institutions of control to be able to have drones. They see the power of it. But yeah. They have not yet figured out how to. And it's a slow mover, thank goodness. But sometimes things like, are drones going to be outlawed completely? I don't think that's possible. And that's one of the powers. As soon as you figure something out and you get any kind of legs under it all, make sure it explodes in a huge way. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to push through that is that they say, well, we can't really regulate it completely now. We can't ban but we'll try to make it so that it's not useful. It's not a useful thing. Well, of course, to be a toy. And it's just because the radio station didn't want a lot of competition. But once they got big enough, their first intention with the regulation of radio engineering stuff to make sure that you have certain specs. Now, the old ones were grandfathered in. They didn't have to do any of this stuff. You know, they could just continue to operate the old thing. But anybody new coming in, well, you had to get this done, they had to get the survey done, putting up a radio station down is extremely expensive. And that's why it's kind of not a commodity. It's something that's trained, kind of like flicker lights. They're so hard to get, they're so expensive. The people kind of train them like Bitcoin. You know, this thing is worth $50,000. Who wants it? Who wants it? And whoever wants to start a restaurant and wants to serve alcohol, they're perfectly willing to spend $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 just for a liquor license. Take it away from your local package store. You always wonder, well, how come I have a package store? You're going out of business. They go and it's easy because they sell their liquor license to somebody else. And that's usually how they decide to say, okay, I'm paying those money or retiring. I want to get out of business. This is what makes it so that you can say to Mexico and have a little package liquor store. Or no bars anymore. Just because they stole their liquor license for the highest bidder, somebody in Albuquerque's tax or something. Anyway, so we have all this information. And what's our biggest problem? I don't know what's the problem, but it's one of the heaviest influencers in how things go. It's government, and that's why these guys say, what should we do? We should get government involved. Because government can force things to happen. Use its power to force it. That is a heck of a situation. Anyway, I think I've used this thing long enough. It's only 2 hours or anything. And it's even recorded that long. Oh, 11 hours and 13 minutes. But I'm going to go ahead and bring it to a halt because I'm just going to... I'm all over the place anyway. Who cares? Really interesting. And you go, you know, it says, my preferences are to be so small you fly under the radar and nobody cares. There is a certain size where you can stay and then nobody really bothers you. Or you try to hide your business fat, or you just do it for fun. If you don't really do it for money, that's all the better. It says, frankly, that's kind of how I look at a lot of this stuff. There's two ways to get by. And most of us do a combination of both, although I have to say honestly that over time I've noticed that we tend far more toward one side to the other. One of them is by making more money. And that's one that always wins out. If, you know, you want something or have a bill that needs paying, just go out and you make more money to make it happen. This is, or you economize. That's me. I'm a whole economist. I'm big about economizing. A lot of people can probably live off of less money than they make right now. I've always thought that was kind of a good thing, because then you could pick if you like. too many of us spend too much of our time in money acquisition to get things or to pay off debt. That's usually the biggest thing. Sadly, the medical field has become the biggest generator of debt that's ever been. And it's almost like if you don't hand yourself over to them and whatever they say you need to pay, you might go to jail. You know, if you say, you know, I can't really afford that, you go, oh, no, you need to sit down, shut up. Your doctor said that you have to have this, so you're going to do it, and I don't care if it costs $200,000. You'll do it, you'll be in debt to us for the rest of your life. And you go, but wait, how about if I just say I don't want to do that? I want to take my chance. No, I'm sorry, you can't do that. That's not right. We will force you to do it whether you like it or not. Probably the big trade-off that a lot of hospitals, hospitals have to take people and care for them even if they can't show an ability to pay. But they never tell you about the dirty side of that, which is if somebody takes you to a hospital, you lose all decision-making power, not all, but a lot of decision-making power. And they'll just do whatever they feel like they want to do. And unless they're nice, there's plenty of nice people who will actually say, oh, here's your choice. And but one of those choices is not leaving. Let me tell you, trying to get my mom out of a hospital by promising to do this for them. That I promised, and I said, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do what you say. And the doctors don't like that, you know. Rule number one about being a patient is thou shalt be obedient to your doctor. So the whole point of going to school for all those years is you got to get off. And you have to go to school and do it. And they didn't do it. You could have them put into the hospital to force you to do it. They will have to submit it where they say, well, he's not being acceptable. just like that. I mean, no notice, no nothing. He went home. He was under psychiatric evaluation for a little while. And then, all of a sudden, he never came back. And I got his job. I wasn't unhappy when I left that job. High pressure, high sparkling. Anyway, so time is definitely up now. I am where I'm supposed to be, so I'll have to go ahead and shut this thing off.